Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are for another this is actually, I think the market's now getting interesting. I think we can make hay now. This is August 23rd, 2011. I think we're now finally getting closer to like this massive collapse and just a mess and a lot of volatility. It's just, you couldn't ask for anything more if you're doing this sort of a show.
Right.
Where people are looking for answers and they'll grasp at straws, and I think we can provide straws.
I know you said don't, but I'm going to tell them. You have to listen to the last second of this show. We have all the answers, right?
Yeah.
We're going to tell them exactly.
We nailed the stuff last week.
But we're going to tell you what the whole thing is all about in a nutshell in the end. I mean, in 10 words less, what's going on? So stick around for that.
So at the beginning, though, what's going on?
Oh, my gosh. We got headlines. We have news. You have things. I don't know if we start off with the serious or the sad or the ridiculous. But
earthquakes.
There's earthquakes. This afternoon, there was an earthquake in Virginia that sent shockwaves up the whole north.
And apparently they ran around like a bunch of little girls. Give me a break. It's embarrassing to the country.
They were evacuating.
When I heard the thing, we have quakes all the time, of course. And when I heard it, it was a 5.9. Oh, big deal. And then my wife who's a hurricane junkie, she mentioned that it was we call it the truck crashing into the house syndrome.
Yeah.
When you have a quake that you're right on top of and it's not really a big quake, or just generally these little quakes that we have in California, you swear to God, a truck just ran into the house. I mean, it ran in, just like you feel just, it's more noise than it is shaking. And it's
right.
Like a truck hit the house. What the hell happened? Did a truck just run into the house? And then you go and there's nothing out there outside, and then you look it up on the government earthquake sites, and you see there was a little quake nearby, and that was that. And now I find out that this quake was the truck running into the house phenomenon, which is so common, and they're running out, they're evacuating the Pentagon, they're worried sick.
But wait, first of all, it's not common there. That's like when I go to Hawaii. You ever go to Hawaii and you have to get on a plane when it rains? They don't know what to do. It could be drizzling. You got a 4-hour wait. You know, you could be taking off in horrible weather from Minnesota in the winter, but in Hawaii, they just don't get that. They don't know what to do.
Yeah,
when's the last time there was an earthquake in Virginia?
Well, they don't have a lot of them, but still.
No, not a lot.
Still.
Okay. Well, we'll send you over a hurricane and see how that feels.
And by the way, I was talking about being – one time I was in Ottawa during one of these snowstorms. I mean, these guys will do anything to get out of there. And
yeah.
I swear to God, this is the only time it's ever happened to me. But I arrived in Ottawa, and it was a blizzard. And I rented a car, and they said, and they pointed where the car was, which was a good, I don't know, 150, 200 yards away. And it was so miserable out. It was zero visibility. I almost died getting to the car. And when I finally got to the car, the lock was frozen shut, and my temperature was—I was having hypothermia, just banging on this thing, you know, trying to. It finally opened up. I got inside. Jeez.
Yeah.
But they'll take off.
Well, let's talk about some of the headlines. There's this whole, you know, today was a gigantic rally in the market on lower volume, but it was what it was. We saw 3% or so on the S&P, 4.5%, 5% between the Nasdaq and Russell, on news that you would think was actually not so good. And there was this gigantic, just out of nowhere, out of the gate, boom. And the headlines that you're reading are something like this. The hopes for another Fed rescue drives a 3% rally on Wall Street.
Hopes? Hopes for a Fed rescue. Hopes.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Or market bets on a Fed miracle. It's kind of like, I think I'm at Shea Stadium waiting for the miracle.
Bets on a miracle.
Right. U.S. stocks jump as many investors sent a plea to Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, come to the rescue of the stalling economy and battered financial markets. How pathetic, besides the fact is the media were printing this, but how pathetic is it? Is it making this assumption and making this kind of commentary? You almost got to think that the people that are writing this have just been washed out recently with their 401ks, and they're begging for something. I mean, it's just terrible that we have to rely on – I mean, what happens if the Fed comes to the rescue and markets go up 20% and then that's the end of that particular stimulus package? Do we just fall down again? So we just got to keep – you know what? Let the Fed just give us 20% in our portfolios and stop going through the charade.
Well, I don't want to sound like a complete crackpot here, but the way I see it, based on the economic cycles, the Fed actually has to pump in $30 trillion over the next 5 to 6 years to keep this thing from tanking.
Well, that's doable, huh?
Well, you know, it's doable to get two or three. And, I mean, they did the job early, and then they, you know, it's like people aren't going to like – they don't like the idea of this, quote-unquote, printing money, even though it's not really printing money. But it seems to me that you can keep throwing money into the system if it doesn't cause massive inflation. What difference does it make?
Well, but the point is that by printing or quantitative easing, whatever you want to call it, or they also call it monetizing the debt with the treasuries, it's a charade. It's a joke. Just give the money. What's the point? Why do we have to buy bonds and do all this other stuff and devalue the dollar and, you know, make – we do have inflation, and if we don't have inflation – and by the way, the numbers recently show some inflationary pressures here.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the real inflation that
We've exported it. We've exported dramatic inflation so much that we're causing riots around the world. That's what all this is about, is the food prices. Some of it has to do with supply demand, but others have to do with the fact that we are using energy. We're looking for alternative energy, so we use corn. We use corn. We offset the raise the price for the feed. The feed, the chickens go up in price, and that's number one. Then you have the problems with the overall energy use in countries around the world. And it just goes on and on and on. We have exported it. We have pretty much taken our – essentially, we're eating nicely and taking the garbage and the crap and putting it on somebody else's lawn.
Yeah, well, you know, somebody's got to have the garbage on their lawn. I guess.
All right. Anyway, let's get
I'd
into something.
I'd rather have that than the other way around.
Right. Well, of course. So Abercrombie and Fitch, I don't know if we talked about this story, but they asked this. You follow the.
Yeah, this is a funny story.
They asked the situation. Now, that somebody's called the situation is kind of nutty, but you know about the show? Do you watch the show? Or
I've never been able to watch a complete episode. We're talking about Jersey Shore. Never been able to watch a complete episode. I watch it for about 5 or 6 minutes once in a while, just I happen to bump into it, and I just can't take it. It is so bad.
Right. Now, I'm from that area, by the way, and talk about posers and people that, you know, think they're all that and think that they have this thing going on. The whole thing is one big it's all contrived. There's no question about that. But there's a fella on there. His name is The Situation. That's his name. I guess he gets into trouble everywhere he goes or something. And he wears these Abercrombie and Fitch clothes, I guess open shirt, and he has a pretty bad rap and reputation. Well, Abercrombie says, do us a favor. Please stop wearing our clothes. Please stop wearing our clothes. And while you're at it, can the entire Jersey Shore cast please stop wearing our clothes? It sends a really bad message. That was kind of ballsy.
Yeah, all of it being a publicity stunt, of course, from the get-go.
Well, naturally. Yeah, you think so? It's a perfect publicity stunt.
Yeah, no, it's a good one.
Yeah. So anyway, that was going on. Abercrombie was tanking as that happened. I think the day that announced it, they were down like 10%.
Yeah, they probably should have told them to wear more clothes.
Now, gold has been on a roll. You know about that, right? You heard something about this?
I've bumped into it, yes, because Twitterers, people especially that listen to some of the other podcasts I do, know that I'm not a gold bug. And I thought gold would have peaked, but I thought it would have peaked by now by a lot. And but it's the public's in on it now. I mean, now this thing is going to kill a lot of people because it's going to go up to 2,500, maybe 3,000, and then just tank and go back down to 9,700, 750, something like that.
So I know that one of your old hosts, Adam, as a matter of fact, because I've talked to him about this. He's not only a gold bug. He needs it in his fingers at all time. He needs to be touching gold at all time, it seems. Seriously. You know, he's got something to carry around with him, right?
And not so much anymore. He bought a gold bar.
Oh, that's good.
He bought a gold bar. I don't know that it's – I think his ex-wife has it though. So I don't – I think he talks a big game. I don't think he's got any gold left. But I don't know for sure.
Are you sure that he bought a gold bar, or he says that he's hanging out at the bar. I know him well.
Yeah. He bought a gold bar. He paid, I think he paid $350,000 for it when gold was about.
That's cheap.
I think it was $900,000 or $850,000 something. He's more than doubled his money on the gold. The gold bar is going to be worth $1 million if this keeps up. But
right.
Again, he doesn't have the gold bar.
Right. Well, the thing is that gold crossed above 1900, and everybody was in on the deal. As a matter of fact, the GLD, which is the gold ETF, surpassed the S&P 500, the most valuable, the highest value ETF on the street. It's the SPY, which trades on the as an ETF. It passed that in value yesterday.
Wow.
That's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, it tells you that something's amiss. This is wrong. This is not going to last. Gold doesn't keep going up forever.
Right. And what's really kind of odd is that on a day that you see headlines that hope for another Fed rescue drives the Wall Street rally, if that's the case, if the Fed does come and rescue and does QE3 and does devalue the dollar, doesn't that mean that gold should be getting more expensive, that more people want to flock to it? Why would gold fall 4% today? Now, mind you, in I think it was Shanghai, they did put up some margin limits and do a few things over there to, you know, dissuade the speculators.
Yeah.
Now, also remember that China, India, and a variety of other emerging markets have been actively buying gold. Now, how great would it be if you were able to be in charge of things like knocking out the speculators, blowing out people, dropping the price 10%, and at the same time, you were the same party that would be buying things here and there? How great is that?
That's the job I want.
Isn't that great? I love that. It's kind of like just being a slot machine for life.
Yeah.
You put money, you make a piece on it, you know? So that's what happened there. And then silver, of course, in sympathy, dropped down about 4% as well. And so far, when we've seen, there's some statistics that show that if you see a gold drop 4%, it really never regains its big steam rally again. But with all that's going on around the world and that you have the pressure from the emerging market governments, the sovereigns, to buy this, you know, you have to wonder. But my thing is that when this thing and if this thing does collapse, or at least I shouldn't say collapse, when it starts just really selling off and you have all these hedge funds and all that are much quicker on the trigger, you could really see a real big implosion. Hmm. Like a 20% drop very quickly. So we'll see.
Which, by the way, doesn't bode well for gold being this great, you know, stabilizer.
Yeah,
the whole
right.
gold argument is bogus.
It's just, you know, it's in vogue right now. It goes in and out. Those people that have had it for years would argue and argue successfully that they've done very well with it. I mean, very well with it. At the same time, there are points that you have to realize that, well, maybe it's time to get off the train for a little while and then get back on. But at this point, if you own gold at 800, so if gold falls from 1900 to 1500, do you really care?
Yeah, apparently not.
Yeah. What are you going to do at 1500? You know what? To bargain again, I'm going to buy it. Because gold has never really gone into, you know, since it was, I don't know what price, it hasn't gone into some, you know, massive long-term lull. Anyway, on to another subject. Goldman Sachs is in hot water, continues to be all just stricken with lawsuits and this Carl Levin deal. And all of a sudden we see yesterday that Blankfein, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, hires a very high-profile defense attorney. And when that news hit the stock got slammed yesterday. It was down to a 52-week low at about 103. Remember when it was 160 recently?
Yeah.
It hit 103, and today it was up just a hair. It was down, actually, in the morning, even lower. And now they're, you know, they're on the whole PR campaign saying, well, it's just a matter of the process and, you know, going through this whole review and the issue about the CES and seeing, you know, collateralized mortgage deals. And, you know, they're in trouble because of all the mortgage deals they put together and that they didn't properly package them.
It's funny that we, on our experimental spreadsheet game that we've been playing, I was long Goldman, and then as soon as it did its 10% kill me, it just tanked.
That's probably you. It's probably all you. People
I think
got
we
wind
should
of-
have probably shorted it, but anyway, again.
Well, all the banks. I mean, look at the banks. They have dropped off. I mean, I cannot believe that Bank of America hit $6.02 today.
Yeah.
Now, I can believe it from the aspect that it's a problem. The rumors were swirling around today, that J.P. Morgan was going to be buying Bank of America with the backing of the government. I said, that was laughable. How in the world is that going to happen? And why would Jamie Dimon want to take on such a monster?
Yeah. No, that sounded ludicrous. And not only that, but everybody's gun-shy right now.
Yeah.
The government, that is.
Yeah, I mean, that was just something that was flying around. You know, Bank of America was down 7% yesterday, down about 4% today. It finished down about 2% just because the market grabbed it and moved it higher. But it was gonna, it would look like if the market didn't just charge ahead today, it looked like it was going to crack the $6 level. So, you know, right now they have just all sorts of problems selling off their parts. They have anywhere from zero to about $200 billion now is being estimated, which is a wide range, of course, of money they're going to have to raise in order to shore up their balance sheet.
Well,
that's ugly.
If for the benefit of the stockholders, I'm assuming that they have probably still some corruption in play that they maybe can leverage.
Yeah, or they're betting on a Fed miracle. Either one. We'll see what happens there.
So my favorite story, actually, which is just hit, was is they finally got – I knew this was going to happen in one way, shape, or form. They got rid of the head of S&P.
Couldn't they wait a little while to make it not look like it was totally pushed – they were pushed around by the government? Couldn't they wait?
What did they – who came up to him and said, hey, we're getting into a little battle here between you and us, and I'll tell you what, we're going to shoot you if you don't quit.
It's unbelievable. I mean, we're talking about weeks after this, because supposedly the S&P, their credibility is shot, and their credibility is shot. Let's just frame this correctly. Their credibility is shot because they took an advanced measure on a situation that they saw where there was too much debt, too much political inability to do anything about it. The deficit was rising and no ability to shore that up and no end in sight to it. And they dropped it down one small notch. And their credibility is shot. Now, tonight, by the way, let's just dovetail this into another story. Tonight, Japan's sovereign credit rating was lowered by Moody's. And they cited a weak prospect for growth that will make it difficult for the government to rein in the world's largest public debt burden. So they went from an A – small A2 to an A small A3. So now the question is Japan going to start a legal battle against Moody's? I mean, now all of a sudden the sovereigns don't like the ratings and they can go after them.
I guess. I don't know.
This is a really bad precedent because now you're starting with any municipality that has problems. They can go after them, possibly even disbanding the entire rating system. The implications are really problematic here. And the precedent they're setting up by strong-arming these – they're supposed to be independent. This – I'll tell you something. The credibility is much more wounded with the president stepping down than not, don't you think?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's a huge issue.
Yes.
And why would – I mean, I'd like to find out what happened that got him to step down. I mean, who told him to step down? It was his decision. Why?
You think it was just one person? I'm sure he got plenty of little nudges.
I'll bet you there was one guy in particular. Something happened. All I know.
Well, of course.
But what?
They were going to say, basically, we're going to make your life miserable. Don't forget that there was the Department of Justice now, all of a sudden, has a new case open. That is re-looking into their ratings of the municipals and of all the collateralized mortgage deals and the mortgage deals back from when it all collapsed. Kind of interesting timing.
If they don't come up, if they come up with kind of no cause or they give them a pass on this because there was no fault or some whatever the Fed comes up with after this investigation, you knew the whole thing was just a shakedown to get rid of that guy.
Assuming we ever hear about the investigation again.
Yeah, it might just – yeah, that's good.
It's sleazy politics. It's very sleazy government. The whole thing is just backroom, the stuff that wasn't supposed to happen under President Obama and this new Congress, et cetera, et cetera. But it is what it is. So on to a another topic. Just let's kind of maybe finish off the discussion about the government and all. Now, it seems that President Obama is going to be providing a post-Labor Day speech with his plans for stimulating the economy. Now, I would love to be on a fly on the wall for this one. So we talked with billionaire Warren Buffett. Had a little tete-a-tete with him on how to boost job creation and spur growth. So I was trying to think about what would he possibly talk to Buffett about. And Buffett, who on one hand is that group of people that think he's this kind, gentle, wise businessman that just, you know, and there's another
multi-billionaire giant.
Yep. There's the other side thinks he's
wouldn't
a real
harm a flea.
Right. You know, the other side thinks he's divisive and wrapped in sheep's clothing, right? So I was thinking, what would he say? So I think that the recommendations from Buffett to Obama were something like this, that we should definitely use the rails more, the railroads for transportation, and put a lot of more people working on them and boost the rail traffic for transportation as it is clean energy and it is very good for the economy. Now, obviously, realizing that Buffett owns a railroad company, then we think that he should probably be talking about creating a major infrastructure for electric cars. Of course, he owns BYD in China, which is I think they had a 97% reduction in earnings from last period, just announced yesterday. I think he should probably recommend that tax credits for soft drink makers like Coca-Cola, one of the largest, if not the largest, 21% of the total Berkshire Hathaway holding, and give banks, I think would be the last thing, give banks like, for example, Wells Fargo, tax credits for providing mortgages to people. I bet you that's somewhere around what the conversation was about. What do you think?
I think you nailed it.
You know, this is all in the name, of course, for the Americans.
And by the way, you have to remember Obama, who knows nothing about business or how things are done in the world outside of government and academia, he probably laps it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I've been working on these job ideas for you. I'm glad you finally called there, Mr. Obama. Okay, let's see. New home sales, close to the worst in history. Awful numbers released today. Just awful. Well below. There's a chart I put up there for you.
Yeah.
DSK, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, has been cleared of the sexual assault case. What the hell was that all about? I mean, that thing was ridiculous, that whole crazy lawsuit with the worker from the hotel and all. I mean, and now it's been totally dismissed.
Yeah.
Who knows?
All predictable. Yeah, at least if you were listening to our other show, No Agenda show, we had this whole thing nailed.
Yeah. So...
Well, let's get back to the new home sales. I mean, you just glossed it over. You mentioned it. And you
it's awful.
Over.
It's just awful. Look at that chart. Actually, you know what?
The chart.
So what I did with this chart was I put the new home sales, which is the annualized pace. So we're, I think, 300,000 right now, which is pretty much the lowest in history since 1963 when this records were being kept. So we gave you a chart of that. It spiked up in 2001 through 6, we'll call it, or 5.
Yeah, it overdid it.
Right, and I put on there just a very simple linear regression.
I like the whole. This chart's a great chart.
Oh, thank you. But I think what's cool about it, if you look at the linear regression, which is a standard, best fit linear regression.
Yeah, it's a good.
It's very interesting that what you see is really a reversion to the mean and an overshoot all the time. Right. So back in the '70s, you saw them really crap out and then pop back up and almost fill that hole up. Drop back down in the early 90s, and then we had this gigantic spike well over the regression,
right?
And then it's almost like a mirror on the other side right now.
Yeah, so that means we're at the bottom. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, you would say you can't get much worse. I would think you're at the bottom. That doesn't mean it's going to pop up right away, right? I mean, we had this period that it just waffled around there at the top for I don't know, a year and a half. So can it get much worse? I don't know how much worse it can get. I don't think so. I don't know if it's going to get better right away. But yeah, I would think that.
Just look at the chart.
Okay,
a couple of things to note. One, it doesn't hang out in a down peak. It doesn't spend a lot of time. It did a little bit in 81, 82, 83. It spent a little excessive amount of time at the bottom, and then it bumped right back up, right to that your mean, which is right in the middle.
Right.
And then it kind of stuck there, and then it dropped again, but just bounced right back up. And then it had this phony baloney run-up, which caused the problem of everything. It caused the entire – this was the crash of essentially the stock market. You know, this is the equivalent of 1929, only happened to be in housing. Who figured that one out? You never can guess these things. It's a problem. So it goes down like a maniac. I mean, this is just amazing. And now it hits rock bottom at 400, and then it drops again and hits another second rock bottom. This is it. This is over for the housing side of the equation. I think the overall economy, it's a different story because it triggered the downturn in the economy. But insofar as housing is concerned, I think now's the time to start buying stuff.
I would tend to agree with it. With mortgage rates being really low, if you're looking to buy property that you, by the way, that you're willing to hold on to, that is for an investment, et cetera, right?
It's not going to take much. Look at these. I mean, where this thing is sitting, and the mean is at 800, moving up because of the population. It's basically population involved, unless there's a big kill off of the public from some bird flu or something. There is going to be a pent up demand that I think is going to. I believe, and I've seen pent up demands work this way. I believe because this bottom is so ridiculous that the pent up demand will. Really, when real estate starts to go up in price, not to mention the housing starts, which will try to keep up there. All those companies are going to be out of business, so it's not going to be easy. I think it's going to be wow.
Well, one of the things I think that needs to happen, and this may seem a bit, I think I mentioned this, but out of the ordinary, I think that interest rates need to come up a little bit. I think the idea of pushing down interest rates is a very deflationary plan when it comes to housing because people are waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. You want people to say, oh my God, I got to get in, like the stock market.
No, I agree with that 100%, but the bank, and I think it also encouraged the banks to loan a little more because right now, essentially, no, I don't care what anybody says about liquidity, you can't get a loan unless you've got great credit.
The banks are making no money on it. The banks are not making any money.
And they're not making any money, so why should they loan? They're not going to get any money back, and it's risky.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. If it pops up a bit, I mean, right now you can get a loan for your house at 4%, probably long term, fixed. If you could get it up to 6.5, which is more normal, I'd like to see a chart of interest rates over the years for housing loans. That'd be a good chart to see. I believe 6.5 things really start popping, and then it could go up to 8.
Overlay that with this.
Yeah,
you could have that in sequence. Yeah,
and have one of your guys do that.
Okay, I'll do that. Hang on a second.
You got slaves. Make one of them do it.
But now I think that you're right about that. The only thing is that would be a little bit of a monkey wrench in this is the amount of homes that are still available on the market for sale. Now, the other thing that would happen, though, is that you would have a drain of that. People would take the money, the houses off the market because people work opposite usually of what they should be doing, right? When houses are at the bottom, they sell. When at the top, they buy. What you want to do is if you can get housing to start moving a little bit, people will say, well, I'm going to raise my price or maybe take my property off the market for a little while and see if that can, you know, you have to go through a little bit of a cycle there. But
I think under normal circumstances, this theory of yours is correct. But because the movement has been so slow and so sluggish, I think people just want to get out and get in. I just don't believe that they're going to be that thoughtful. And there's no evidence. I mean, what we're saying is like kind of a slightly enlightened look at what possibly could happen. I don't think the public's going to take the money and run. I don't think they're going to start trying to outthink the system at this point in the game.
Yeah. Well, if you look at, though, you say a long time. It's been 5 years since the top. But look back to the 70s, you know, 70, 75, 76. I mean, you saw from 76 to 81 – a drop, not as severe, but drop, and then it turned around. Now, again, we had a different situation, and, you know, the baby boomers were buying houses. You don't have the baby boomers anymore. We have an aging population. They're not buying homes. They're trading those in. We don't have as much of the population growth at the right age. We have population growth, but not at the right age. The right age is somewhere in the, 35 to 45-ish.
Yeah, well, there's an issue there. But a lot of the same people that you're poo-pooing is dropping into the retirement era are looking for places to finish off. In other words, the second homes or places in the mountains or places outside of population centers. I mean, they're not I mean, the baby boomers are now going into retirement as of, like, just now.
Right.
At some rate. And they're going to keep up with – I forgot what the number is on a daily basis. It's quite a few. But we're talking about people becoming 65 years old.
Mm-hmm.
In an economy where you have to keep working – because a lot of these, even though some people can retire, most of these people can't really retire. I think this is going to be pushed off. I think this effect that everyone's talking about, oh, what are they going to do? They're not going to, at 65, today's 65 retiree is not going to move from their three-bedroom house, even if they're an empty nester, into a community or a convalescent hospital. They're just not going to do it. They're going to either get a place on a golf course up in Washington State, for example, or Arizona, which I think has got investment opportunities all over the place,
or
Florida. They're not going to just bail out of the, and they're not going to rent. They can't. Mm-hmm. Most baby boomers can't put up with being renters,
right? And rent prices actually right now are more expensive in most places than it is to buy a house,
right?
So that's going on. That should be, you know, right there should be something to be said. I mean, when you see that, for example, the S&P 500 is yielding a higher rate than bonds, then you may say, well, maybe it's the extra risk I should take there. Same thing with renting. If renting's more expensive, then maybe it's a good idea to think about, you know, picking up a house to live in at this point. Because the question really is, how much cheaper is it going to get? Is it going to go down another 10%? Oh, maybe. You know, we'll see some numbers this week on housing prices.
It's bottomed.
But it's getting close to the bottom. I would tend to agree with that, unless something really god-awful happened, which... We'll
which
see.
Is a bigger buying opportunity, but there's but this right here seems to be the median bottom, and I don't see things getting. I mean, yeah, 10% maybe, but that's it.
And I guess it's really important to state, and I think it's really important to every once in a while sit back and move out of the emotional part of things and realize that everything cycles. Everything cycles, and you know there will be a, now. That doesn't mean one stock that goes out of business is going to come back, but I'm saying the broader picture of economics. Things cycle. Things go up. Things go down. It's just the way it is. Just the way it is.
Yeah. This is this actually, I believe, people are going to look back at like this year, and it's going to be considered the greatest real estate buying opportunity. I sound like a guy selling on one of those radio shows on Saturday.
And this message is brought to you by Dvorak Real Estate.
It sounds just like it. That's what it sounds like. But I really believe this is going to be one of the people going, wow, why didn't we buy in 2011 or 2012 when the prices were there? You could buy – look at these things. They were half overpaying today. I've actually talked to a couple guys in the buying property recently. They're pleased as punch about it.
Yeah. Let's go over to China and realize that the Chinese are really smart. You know why? The Chinese version or Chinese, I don't even say counterpart, but the extension of Groupon is closing its offices in some of its cities and laid off hundreds of employees. They're not expanding. I guess the Chinese do not like the coupon thing.
Hmm.
I don't like the coupon thing. It's annoying.
I don't like Groupon specifically, but
I find their stuff is they're supposed to give me with a reasonable vicinity around where I am, and I get these things that are just far away. You know, I don't need to get the last thing I need to do is get like 75% off a legal consultation. I don't want to go to that attorney. I'm not going to that attorney. You know, and the whole thing just you know, there's some things that are interesting, but I've talked to a lot of vendors, and they all say they tried it. It's great, but what ends up happening is that the people that usually come to the place bring the coupon, so they lose money on the deal.
Yeah.
It's not like bringing on new business. So.
Yeah, I had this. I talked to a restaurateur in San Francisco who runs a nice little French bistro, and they have these events twice a year in the city. I think it's twice a year, maybe four times. But it's it's called the Dine Experience or something, and all these restaurants sign up for it. And they have these special little fixed price menus of two or three things, an entree, appetizer, and dessert. And it's at a really dirt cheap price. And the whole town is all the restaurants are packed the whole time. The guy says, you know, the business is good. He says, you don't really make any money. And all the people that come in are just one-timers. You never see them again, they no matter how good the food is.
Right.
So these things are flaky.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, something happened today, and they give, again, back to the media and what they're kind of talking about. It seems that the chief financial officer of Fossil, the watchmaking jewelry company.
Oh, yeah, those guys. Yeah,
which, by the way, we rode that stock up very nicely, got off. The thing came down, I don't even know where it came. It came down 25-30% in this latest sell-off. And I guess the stock was the number one performing stock today in the Russell 1000, the big cap index, up 16%. Reason being that the chief financial officer bought a whopping 2,000 shares. Now, mind you, that's, you know, pretty good money. That's, what is that, $180,000? But, I mean, that's reason to push the stock up 16% in a day. You know, nobody liked it 3 days ago, but today they love it.
There must be some other – I think there's a piece of information missing from the story.
Well,
like,
no,
there's a rumor.
There's
got to be a rumor.
Nope. I'll tell you what it is. That stocks across the board today were outrageously on fire today. Mm. Now, meanwhile, they were getting killed the last several days. Lululemon was up 11.5% today. It's been down every day over the last 2 weeks. So today was one of those days that just was a lot of short covering. There was a lot of anticipation, anxiety to get in before the miracle on Wall Street. And on Friday, which is at 10:30 in the morning, by the way, that he's speaking from Jackson Hole. And, you know, so I think that there's a big issue about, you know, getting in front of all this. And, you know, worst comes to worst. It doesn't work out. You just get out, I suppose. So there's a lot of trading going on.
Hmm.
A lot of trading. So do we talk about... there's three or four things I want to talk about. All right, this I have to, more media stuff. So twisting. This is the greatest twisting I've ever seen. So this is the news line. Ready? This is what got everybody a little excited about banking today. The U.S. banking industry continues to show signs of improvement as the number of troubled banks for the first time fell in 5 years. But
where do you get that number?
This is I have the numbers. It's FDIC put it out. Said that 865 of the nation's 7,500 banks were on its problem list at the end of June.
Well, do they have that list available?
Yeah, you can look at that.
Really?
I think it's
the banks are listed.
You know what? Now that you've mentioned, there is some ways I've seen it before, and I don't remember how I saw that. And it was something of a strange way. I don't remember what the deal was, but it was something that somebody put this together of the. I don't remember. You know, I guess you're right. They don't have them public. They just have the listing. Because that would be problematic. You can't show people who's in trouble. Why should you do that? Why should you be honest and transparent? But here's the thing. 865 banks are now on the trouble list, a little more than 10%. And it's down from last month, which was 888. Now, here's what's funny about this. Of course you're moving in that direction because more banks are closing all the time. Right or wrong?
Yeah.
So you see two here, three there, four there. So eventually it kind of adds up and you have a lot less banks that are probably – that were on the troubled bank list. And if they weren't, that's a problem – that have been closed. So now you have a smaller universe of banks and less banks that could be on the problem list because they've been taken off. No kidding.
So do you think if Bernanke does not do a QE3 on Friday, which I believe he won't, that the market's going to collapse or
I don't think
drop
it's gonna,
100
I
points?
Yeah, it will drop. I think I have a plan for
not
that.
Not collapse,
on,
but you know.
Yeah, I think that it will be deflated, the excitement about it. I'm not really sure what QE3 will do because there's a lot of dissension within the Fed about it to begin with. The rates are as low as you're going to get, unless you want to say and backtrack that QE was for something different than lowering interest rates and they don't want to say lowering the dollar, but helping employment situation. We know that interest rates are as low as they've ever been right now on the 2-year, 10-year, et cetera. We know that employment hasn't budged at all. And we also know that once they stopped doing the QE, the stock market took back all of the gains from when he announced it.
Right.
So therefore,
you have to keep doing the QE or otherwise
it doesn't work. Right. So that's why I said just give the money to the people and be done with it.
Well, it would be the same. Yeah. But actually, that's what's wrong with that. I don't know. It seems like the same thing.
Right. Just open up a plane and drop $100 bills and everybody goes get them.
I'm outside.
So now I think that
with binoculars,
yeah, there's no I don't really understand where the benefit will come from for QE3. He already announced that interest rates are at ridiculously exceptionally, amazingly low rate through at least, unless something changes, 2013. That's the pledge. So that's something that never really happened before with the Fed.
Right.
And that dropped down bond, dropped down the dollar, it dropped down interest rates. So beyond that,
so he's people probably are buying treasuries left and right is what you're saying. And so what's the point of buying more? What's the point of the government buying more?
Exactly.
I mean, what are they going to drop the interest rate to? I mean, it's ridiculous. You might as well just hang in there.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that I think they'll do is they're probably going to go and change the maturity selection of the bonds. Now, they're going to start moving out on the yield curve because the low end is extremely high. It's at the highest price, essentially, it's ever been. Why would they go buy that? It's not a good investment. And go out on the longer side, you know, 10 year, 15, 20 years, and buy more of those. So anything that comes due and the re...
isn't that the wrong thing? Aren't you not supposed to do that because you want that... That curve from short term to long term to be in such that it's you know the short term ones are low interest and the long term ones are high interest to keep a balance. You start jacking down the long term ones with a QE3 purchase of a bunch of bonds, isn't that screwing the idea up basically?
Well, what it does is it messes up the banks because right now the yield curve has flattened over the last several months. And that's not good for the banks.
Right, you don't want
the banks
that
have the same margin. But the fact is that we still need to spur on, if it is the idea to spur on the mortgages and bring mortgage rates down so that people have more accessible cash so they can refinance and have more money in their pocket.
Yeah, but we just discussed that. They're not going to loan the money at those rates.
Well,
they got to sit on it, and I don't know what they're doing with the money.
Well, they got to do something. There was a gentleman named Doug DeShield. He was on, I think, CNBC a few weeks ago, and he talked about something I thought was brilliant. In that, and I don't know if he talked about this, but Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac have all these loans outstanding at, let's say, 4%, 5%, 6%. And all these people are paying their mortgage. Some people aren't, but all these people are paying their mortgages, but they can't refinance because they're underwater. So make a plan that says that anybody who is current with their mortgage at this point can automatically refinance. If they're already paying, there's no risk there. There's no further risk. Let them refinance at a much lower rate, putting tons of money back in their pocket. And yes, that is government subsidized, but that would be a great plan and almost too easy to do. And you say, well, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will lose money on that. Well, too bad. They're losing money anyway, and the government's putting in $5 billion here, $5 billion there. So instead of doing this crazy QE2, QE3, do something about subsidizing Fannie and Freddie to subsidize the mortgages for those people that can't refinance, which is millions of people.
Yeah, well,
that's a no-brainer.
Unfortunately, it's never going to happen. I mean, I'm reminded of Gary Johnson's, the ex-governor of New Mexico, who's a kind of a failing presidential candidate with really – this idea just floored me. I'm going to actually run the clip of him talking about it on the No Agenda show. And he just made the suggestion. Every time I bring it up to anybody, they go, huh, that's an interesting idea. We have a job problem in this country. Why don't we just reduce corporate tax to zero? If you reduce corporate tax in the United States to zero, every company in the world will flock here because there's really no other place that does this, including all these Canadian companies, which are paying, I think, 18% compared to our 35%. They will flock here and create jobs instantly because all these companies will be here. The zero corporate tax, I mean, they'll just be rolling in money.
I would tend to agree with you, but the question would be, is it that much of an offset compared to the price of labor in other places? I mean, our labor costs are very high here.
The way things have been going in other places, like in China, as a matter of fact, if you go to the Chinese factory and you start asking them about their cost of labor, sure, there's a couple of places like Foxconn. They have 200,000 people working in one factory, and this takes up half the city. But most of these guys are already talking about moving toward robots. And the fact of the matter is, if you have zero tax and you can put all your money into a system that allows for robotics to pick up the slack on the labor costs, I think that would be a positive thing. But I think that the offset would be...
Oh, wait, back up.
I know what you're going to say.
How are you going to create employment if you have robots?
Well, there has to be people maintaining the robots who are usually high paid. And robots don't replace... It's not a one-to-one replacement. And, you're going to end up with robots anyway. You might as well put them here in the USA.
I hear you. I don't know if that will fly.
It's not going to. You don't know if it's going to fly, the idea of zero corporate income tax? I can tell you right now. You want the answer? Of course not.
But what about the money that is out there that is sitting on the balance sheets of corporations with overseas assets that they're not bringing back and not repatriating?
If you change the corporate tax to zero, that money comes right back to the USA.
Right. I don't know why they don't work on that and say you could bring a certain amount back.
No,
and
how
maybe,
about just dropping it to zero?
Tax holiday.
Bring it all back.
Bring it all back. Well, that doesn't guarantee that they're going to use it. But, yes, I agree with you. There's some benefit there. Maybe dividends. Maybe there's 100 different things that can happen. And if Bernanke is really focused on stock market issues, wealth, the whole wealth effect, that would be beneficial. I agree with you. I totally agree with you. But I don't know. I mean, there's great plans out there. It seems like nothing's being done besides a lot of jabbering and talk. And, you know, they're just in such – They're almost paralyzed in Washington. You can't do anything because they're so worried about their jobs. That's what it is.
Yeah, they have one little earthquake and they all walk out on the job.
Right, right, exactly. Do we talk about the HP numbers at all?
No,
the HP
not
earnings?
Really.
Those are miserable. HP was down 20% on the numbers. I mean, I don't recall a time that HP was down 20% in a day. I mean, after Mark Hurd left, it looks like the place just imploded.
They have problems. I don't know why they don't get rid of Apotheker, or whatever they call him, and put in Carol Livermore. She's the old hack from HP who's been around forever, and everybody knows that she could run the company fine, and it would have a female that knows the ropes. But apparently that's not going to happen. I guess Mark Andreessen's getting a lot of flack for he was the Apotheker promoter, and he was also the guy who pushed the idea of buying the Palm WebOS and all the rest of it, which they dump just out of the blue.
That was a quick one, by the way. $1 billion spent and gone in 6 months, a year.
Yeah,
that was a waste.
So yeah,
but now they have the. I guess the big thing is that they have the patents. That's the biggest thing now. Patents. Everybody needs patents. But WebOS is out. They're thinking about spinning out and selling off the compact unit, the PC unit.
Right.
Which is really a death blow, I think, to the rest of the PC makers saying, wait, it's not profitable? You know, China just overtook us as the number one buyers and users of PCs in the world.
Yeah, you think it would be profitable. I mean, the market for PCs on a year-to-year basis is $200 billion. You can't make money?
I don't know why you can't make money. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So they dropped. They're talking about splitting it up. They're talking about more layoffs. Layoffs are all over the place.
Actually, a rumor came out today that Samsung is interested in buying the PC division.
Hmm.
Which would make some sense because they could pick up the WebOS and then run with that with their tablets.
That'd be interesting. Yeah. And don't forget that a lot of the currency is a lot higher value than here, so it makes some of the stuff. We're back to when the Japanese were buying our golf courses in Rockefeller Center.
Right.
You know?
My
that's
favorite.
What it's kind of come down to. Let's see. A couple more things we can talk about here. Rumor that Apple may buy ARMH, the processor company that you liked. But I think that is probably not going to happen due to antitrust laws. Mm. I would think that would be hard-pressed for them to do such a thing.
I don't know. I'm not convinced of that.
You think they could do that? I mean, if they buy it, well, I mean, it's possible. I mean, they could. Well, there's too many other mobile devices that utilize it. And, you know, Apple is one of these, obviously, the companies that likes to keep their own to their own. So that would create only really what? What's left? Intel, MIPS, what's left?
AMD.
AMD making a mobile product?
Yeah, actually, they are. They have a couple of nice little chips that they have in some of these. HP's got some AMD chips in it, the little lightweight laptop, long battery life. Yeah, nothing like the ARM chip. I mean, there's nothing like that.
Right.
But it's more powerful. I mean, the x86 chips are more powerful than the ARM chips, except, you know, they don't have this ridiculous battery life.
Right. So that's one of the things that's happening. We also noticed tonight that Goldman – I think we've heard this before, but Goldman and Citi are planning to market bonds backed by commercial mortgages next month. Now, I was under the impression that this is what got them in.
Sounds familiar.
Well, yeah, I mean, this one is what got them in big trouble and what they're under investigation for. Maybe not the same thing, but and commercial mortgages, isn't that the area that has the greatest degree of risk right now of all the big resets coming?
It doesn't sound right.
What else is new? What else is new? Let's see. Now, here's something. The recent volatility of the markets, you know, this up 200 points, 300, 400 points and down, et cetera, has been the greatest deviation of volatility in history.
Oh, really?
You don't usually see these dramatic Six Sigma events with 400 or 500 point days up and down. Like, up one day is a Six Sigma. But you don't see these kind of events happen very often. And they're usually clustered. But at the level that we're seeing it now and the last couple of years back in 2008, 2009, this is the greatest concentration that has ever been seen in such a period. Which I thought was interesting. And another little statistic that people should know is that in a bear market, in a downtrend, big bear market, is a time that you usually see these gigantic moves on the upside. Very rarely in a bull market, in a rally, do you see many, if at all, 3-4% days on the upside.
They tend to march. It's like marching. It's like the Nazis marching on Paris. I mean, there's just up.
Right. No stopping them. But so that kind of gives you a clue of what kind of market we're in right now. You know, so one day up does not make for a long-term trend.
No, by that theory, if you keep having these days like today, I think it was 200-something, not sure, just up, crazy, and then down, and then up crazy. It's just, every time it does that, you have to assume that this is the time to look for shorts. And I think if we take a look, and we probably should move over to, I think we're ready to look at our stocks. Mm-hmm. We're essentially short on the DH Unplugged stock portfolio. Everything's short. I want to mention, except for the joint buy that we both picked with J.C. Penney's. Let's by looking at this, what is the number one stock on there that's done the best on that list?
Well, especially with even with the uptrend up move today, it's obviously Netflix.
Well, there you go.
The most successful short picker of Netflix ever in history, John C. Dvorak.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
The only one that's ever made money on a short. And that's guaranteed, by the way. That's guaranteed because now you're...
Above. So if it just makes a change, I'll just get wiped.
You could only be 3% worse than you are now since it moved up 7% today, technically.
There you go.
That's a beautiful thing. Really, this should be one of those times in history that is marked and put into some kind of Hall of Fame.
So now I'm eyeballing Apple.
Oh, yeah, right. Just to let you know that anybody, if you want to check this out, this is a Google spreadsheet that we set up, and it has some really nice features that you could actually do yourself. It pulls in all the mnemonics in the various areas from Google Finance, so it gives you live pricing automatically. And this is over, if you want to check this out, you can go to dhunplug.com, and at the bottom it says weekly stocks, and click that, and it'll show you all the different things in the spreadsheet that we have. And it identifies whether we're short or long, and it does like an if-then, and then calculates gains and losses, et cetera. And we do this, for fun, just to kind of get a little bit of real-life discussion in terms of stocks.
And we have a bunch of impractical rules. We can only do it once a week, and you can't, call Andrew on Friday and say, hey, I want a short son. No, today's the day we can add it or we can add stocks, and we can't even remove the stocks. By the way, they have to be bumped off by the math. Yeah,
right.
So it's nothing that we want people to do because it's impractical. It's just a little game we play.
Right. So this is available there, and of course, this is just for fun. There is no recommendation to buy or sell any of these securities because they carry a lot of risk when you buy or sell, and some of the names may be owned by clients of Horowitz and Company, or Andrew, or John. And those are duly noted if it is under the disclosures. I will mention one thing, though, that there is one caveat to buying it now, is unless we say that we're going to buy it on a certain date, time, or anything like that, that can be done.
Yeah, right. Well, we did that with a couple of crazy shorts or of new issues where the stock comes out. We go long waiting for it to turn around and then short it, which may take a day or two. But that's counted. That's fair.
The other thing we're going to do is similar to that, and that this happens now on Friday. So the plan for the QE3 discussion
you're going to
is
do
this.
Because of the Friday speech.
Yep.
So you have
the speech is scheduled for about 10:30. Let's just put that into the discussion.
Yeah, he's always late, by the way.
Yeah.
Have you noticed this guy's never on time?
Well, he doesn't have to be. He's the man. He's the man He's the guy
aisle.
Paying for your dinner. The guy paying for the dinner does not have to be on time.
So I thought the taxpayers were paying for the dinner. My dinner, not him personally. But anyway, so we have Friday. So you have some specific instructions Friday after speech.
Right.
And with no QE. So you have a couple of variables put in. Yeah, you know, okay.
But I would say that either way, really. So here's the deal. So I think there's going to be a lot of anticipation, short covering. May not be big ups or downs, but I'm just saying there's going to be anticipation going into this. There's a lot of thought, especially pumped by the media, that something's going to happen, and there's going to be this miraculous something that's going to drive the stock market up the next 20-25% and solve the world's problems. So oftentimes there's a phrase that we use that says, buy the rumor, sell the news. So we're going to sell the news. And after the speech, at about 11:15, we're going to put down 11:15. I don't know exactly when this is going to happen. And sometimes things move up after this. But 11:15, just because, again, the impracticability of what we're doing here, we're going to actually purchase the 3x short.
You're going to do that? This is a small cap bear 3x.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. We've been using that recently pretty successfully in our portfolios. Actually.
Really? The 3x?
Short-term trading. Yep. Short-term trading. Moves pretty quickly. It was down 14% today, by the way, because the Russell 2000 was up almost 5%.
That's a gutsy, and there were also, that is a gutsy thing to even think about. You trade. I mean, I can't put it on because I haven't got the nerve.
Well, the other thing is that we're going to short silver, assuming that there's no QE, assuming is that the dollar's not going to drop any further, assuming that there's not going to be any further as much concern about dollars being just blown out, et cetera, and the world coming to an end because the dollar's ending. We're going to go in short silver. Silver actually came down through my Fibonacci retracement level yesterday, and it probably would have been a good short right there. But right now, we're going to short right after the speech as well, silver.
You know, I was looking at that chart you gave us last week of the S&P and those support lines, those Fibonacci lines.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty obvious that 1,100 is like a major.
Yeah.
If the S&P drops below 1,100. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, it definitely support level. It's got two things going for it. Number one, we've held the support for a while there. There was some support resistance sometime back at that level, and it's a round number. Round numbers are very important, no kidding. I mean, really, 1,200, 1,100, you know, 13,000, all those numbers are like very important numbers, just the way it is. As a matter of fact, if you ever use sell stops, never put it at a round number. Put it somewhere a little bit below. So if you want to sell something to 50, you know, you sell it at 49.72, because usually when it gets to that level, it pops really quickly below it because everybody else uses these sell stops at those levels, and then it will come back up over it. You know, so that's where your line in the sand usually is. And the other thing that I'm going to recommend shorting is, or not recommend, put on our list, is a Hartford Financial. Hartford Financial is, even in a good market, was down today. It's dropped off a cliff recently. It has a lot of problems with regard to, it's in the healthcare area, government spending is down, et cetera. And on top of that, there is the yield curve has flattened out a bit, so that doesn't help them either. And then finally, there's a gigantic gap in the volume going back in history between 16, where we are now, 17, and about 13. And if it kind of moves down, as a matter of fact, today it was down as much as 4%, but the market rallied and pulled everything up. If it drops the markets, I do believe that Hartford will see a lot more selling going on, down to about 13. So that's the thesis on that. You have anything you want to put in here?
Well, you know, I ran into a couple of things I thought might be some buys, but I've decided that for the next 2 years,
yeah,
I'm going to concentrate on shorts. And
I hear you.
And so I'm looking at, although I think the market could have, you know, these little moves up occasionally. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that you want to look for shorts, and so you want to see some stock that's kind of shot up. I mean, I could look at, for example, if I go to look at some of the top gainers and top losers today, you can just say, well, let's just pile on one of these top losers. I think like USA Truck, I don't know, something happened there. But that seems like not the way to approach a short. You want to find it like one of the top gainers that probably shouldn't you know, but unfortunately, a lot of the top gainers are penny stocks, so you have to avoid them because it's just, you know, you're going to just get wiped out on our model because you get that 10% thing, so it's not going to hang in there very long.
Right.
So I'm looking at, for example, Pharmerica Corporation, which had a big, huge spike at 1389, up 27% over something or other. That looks like a like something that might be a nice short. And RentTrak Corporation's another one that had a had a big bump on not much volume.
In fact, yeah, very low volume. I'm looking at
and,
that here.
And that, but that's
yeah, that was just a, that was a that was a dead cat bounce is what we call that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It looks like it's on its way to the bottom. It's a movie production theater's operation of some sort. So as a lark, let's short that and see what happens.
Rent, right. Yeah, let's see what the volume actually is on this. Is there volume? 200, 300. Yeah, there was, and actually, if you look at the chart today, how interesting it is that there's no volume on the up.
Right.
You know, you usually see that kind of move, some volume. But basically, it was that the sellers just laid off today and said, you know what, we're going to simply just let this thing ride out, and with the thesis that they'll come in and short again if that's appropriate. So I would rent. Yeah, that's an ugly looking chart, my friend.
Yeah,
from 22 to 12. Oof.
What I'm looking for is ugly.
Yeah, that qualifies.
Now the one that I was also looking at, in terms of a, although I'm not gonna, I don't want to do this because I don't like the, I just don't like new highs because these things tend to, who knows when it's going to stop, as opposed to top gainer. I consider those are two major differences, and is SUS. Which is a grocery store company, SUSS, which has been skyrocketing, more or less. And if we look at that chart, it just doesn't give me a lot of confidence as a short yet, but I'm thinking about it somewhere down the road. And it's
right,
$20 bucks. It's reasonable.
Mm-hmm. It's I'm putting your rent track on here. And there you go.
So I'll just let it slide, but I'm going to be on the lookout for the shorts,
right.
And there's a lot of them. But I'm going to base it on companies that just a lot of these dead cow bounces and all the other kind of things, as opposed to just
you guys call this fading the one day pop.
Yeah,
fading the one day pop.
Fading the one day pop. That's what I'm going to do, and I like that. As opposed to shorting a falling knife, which is
right. Well, there's a lot of times that what happens is that there's a rotation, one day up, one day or a couple days up, a couple days down. The biggest movers one day on the downside are picked up. Bargain hunters are picking it up. And the next day it sort of stalls, and all of a sudden you get people that were in it for one day selling. So that's not the worst thesis I've ever heard.
Yeah, well, what is the worst thesis you've ever heard?
I think some time ago I heard that there was somebody who decided that it would be really a great idea to buy a small oil company out of Africa.
The Nigerian oil company. Oh, that's the – okay. Well, it's hard to top that one.
Anyway. So that was probably the worst. All right, we'll see you next week, and lots going on. And,
I think we're entering a fun time where I think people are going to be interested in seeing what we think because you know, writing for Market Watch over the years, the editors always say, "Guy, when the market is just the worst in the worst it can be, and things are terrible, our business is great,
right?
Because people are looking for some ideas."
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
I'll speak to you next week. You're the best.
Adios.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.